Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Your Ben Jarofsky Show for this Wednesday, February 21st, starts now. Today on the show, making his always triumphant return, a guest you may know as a Chicago journalist, you may know him as a former press secretary, or you may just know him as a good guy. Well, we know him as Monroe Anderson, and this is Monroe Wednesdays. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, you want to stay updated on what the best in Chicago is, well, you need to head to ChicagoReader.com. And if you want more Ben Jarofsky, head to ChicagoReader.com/Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A, V as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Ask Monroe Wednesday, and here's why. Because it's pretty obvious to me that Mayor Brandon Johnson and his press apparatus need to ask Monroe Anderson how the job should be done. All right? Let's go to an old vet, an old pro, my dear friend Monroe Anderson, who's standing by. All right, let me just do the backup before I bring Monroe Anderson. This one, folks, there's so much horror in the news today. Slaughter and carnage and just devastation. It's all exceeding the end of democracy on the horizon here in the United States as Donald Trump continues to make advances with his MAGA army. Tucker Carlson going to Russia and sucking up to Putin. I'm just thinking of all the, well, actually, that's almost funny. It's so bizarre. But anyway, all right, so this one had me smile. I got to admit, ladies and gentlemen, this one had me smiling because in so many ways, the stakes are low. So it was a front page story in today's Bright One, my Chicago Sun-Times, and delivered as always, home delivered as always, I should say. Fran Spielman, City Hall reporter, wrote it. Mayor's messy messaging. Come on, Sun-Times, with that alliteration. Mayor's messy messaging is the headline. It's an analysis. It's called Sending the Wrong Message. And it talks about the ineptitude of Mayor Brandon Johnson's PR machine at City Hall and how it's not doing a very good job, at the very least. And this is actually a topic we've had on this show many times. Mick Dumke's talked about this. My dear friend Mick Dumke's talked about this. Mayor Johnson is, not doing a great job in the PR, with PR. That is for certain. But yesterday stood out, man. Monroe, this is a piece of work. So the mayor, Mayor Johnson, had set up a meeting with the Chicago board, Chicago Sun-Times editorial board. It was Zoom. So they were all in the same room together. And so when the meeting was about to begin, Ronnie Reese, who's the mayor's PR guy, top PR guy. I know, Ronnie. What up, Ronnie? Ronnie was the one who helped get me to have Brandon Johnson come to the promontory. So got a little love for Ronnie there. Ronnie Reese insisted that it would be off the record. Now, Monroe, this is me speaking, and you could weigh in a little while. What? Ronnie, off the record. What's the point of even having the meeting if it's off the record? The whole point is you spin them, Ronnie. You get them in a room and you spin them, okay? The mayor is doing a great job. Okay, you got to put up with a question or two. You know, Ramana Hussein's on there. She'll ask you a tough question or two. Lorraine Forte will ask you a tough question or two. Yeah, I don't know who else is in the room at the Zoom meeting, but the whole point of it is you want to get your message across. If it's off the record, what good is it? Like, what? Say what? So Lorraine Forte, who is the editorial page editor, sorry, Lorraine, she's the boss in charge of the editorial board. Let's just call it for what it is. Essentially, she said, this isn't working. It's not going to be, you can't have an off-the-record meeting with the editorial board. Duh. And Ronnie's like, oh, yeah, well, I'm the new sheriff in town. And if I want it off the record, it's going to be off the record. And Lorraine said, oh, yeah, I'm the boss. And she gave him the heave-ho. Well, I don't know if she gave him the heave-ho, ladies and gentlemen. This is my imagination running away with me to quote to Temptations. But somehow or other, the conversation ended. And Brandon Johnson, according to the Sun-Times account, didn't say a word. He just let Ronnie do all the talking. I'm like, what the? Brandon should have stepped in. Yeah, I'm just giving you some advice, Brandon Johnson. You should have said, no. Let's all settle this right now. Ronnie, I appreciate you looking out for me, and you think what you're doing is in my best interest. Lorraine, I appreciate you have your rules, but I'm going to go with Lorraine. So any question, ask me any question. It's on the record. That shouldn't you go through life that way? It's like, yeah, I'll discuss. I'm a grown-up. I can handle it. I can handle any question you ask. I'm smart enough to what? Articulate my responses in such a way that I duck and dodge, avoid saying something controversial, or maybe I do want to say something controversial. The great ones know how to play the game. You can't run from the press. So, Monroe, I bring you on. Now, Monroe Anderson, you all know him as a critic of Trump. Great journalist, the country's foremost authority on white people. And for that, I thank you immensely, Monroe. Your service on that front has been invaluable.
Helping white people to understand themselves for two decades.
White people are like, I'm confused about white people. I got to go to Monroe. Well, let me explain to you. You're a racist. Oh, okay. Not that complicated. We will get into that in a little while. Monroe was also the press secretary to Eugene Sawyer, former mayor Eugene Sawyer, in a really difficult time, challenging time, to put it mildly. And someday we got to take the deep dive in that, Monroe, because Sawyer was getting it from all sides. You know, Burke and Verdoyak were still playing their game, you know, feeding the Chicago press corps. Feeding time. Here you go. They're like seals in a zoo. Open up. Here comes a fish. They just take
you know, I have a chapter about just that.
Yes.
In the recently published Chicago's Modern Mayors.
Yes. And some people
be read.
Some people
Dick,
say it's the
Dick
best.
Simpson should be on your show talking.
Yes. We'll bring Simpson on and yeah. I'll put it to him right away. Dick, I hate to say it. I agree with everyone who says Monroe's chapter is the best chapter in this book. Just say it, Dick Simpson. Some of the other ones, Mayor Daley's a great guy. Come on, he's not that great a mayor. Got to get over that. No, but we'll bring Dick on. Just teasing Dick Simpson. I really love Mayor Daley, Ben. So, Monroe, okay, you were Mayor Sawyer's press secretary. What advice would you give Ronnie Reese, who is the mayor's press secretary? And what advice would you give Mayor Johnson about dealing with the horde of reporters, the mob, at City Hall? Would you have, for instance, an off-the-record conversation with the editorial board? Your thoughts.
And that is so ridiculous. It's laughable. Okay, so you actually go through this meeting.
Yeah.
And the mayor says whatever he's going to say. And then the Sun-Times writes a story about it. How is it going to be attributed? Is it, and sources said this and sources said that.
So stupid.
It makes no sense whatsoever. The way the mayor's press secretary should have handled this was to prepare the mayor. You sit down with the mayor before you have the meeting and you go over the stories that are likely, the topics, issues that are likely to be asked or challenged that the mayor's been doing. And you give him, help him, you don't give him, you help him go through answers that will spin the stories in his advantage. So that when he sits down, basically what he's doing is making nice with the media And they will theoretically be nice to him in writing the story. Now, since Chicago's main media has a problem with a black man in charge, that's not exactly going to happen. But you need to have the meetings with the editorial boards, because if you don't give them material, they will go dig up their own, and that will even be more damaging to you. And plus, they can justify their attitude and their writing bad things about you and not giving you the honeymoon that white males can automatically expect.
Oh my goodness. Honeymoon with white mares. In case of Daly, that honeymoon lasted like 25 years, I want to say. I love you, Mayor Daly. Oh my God. And he was so abusive and mean and nasty to reporters. My God, threatening and bullying and then they loved him. I don't know, Monroe. Sometimes I go for my walks and I go, what is with Chicago? Are we so blind to our inconsistencies, the way we treat and react to Brandon Johnson as opposed to the way we treat and react to Mayor Richard M. Daley and Mayor Rahm Emanuel? Are we just that clueless as a civilization, as a people? I think the answer is yes, we are. Because Chicago, like, they act like you're shocked when we point out the inconsistencies in their attitude toward Daley. Was such a bully. He was so mean and nasty to reporters. And I don't remember any, I do not remember, with the exception of a handful of like the younger ones, like Mick Dumke, any of them standing up to him. You know, it was like, oh, the mayor cares about
it. Okay, this is the problem with beats for reporters. Now, beat for your listeners may not be up on this. A beat is where a reporter covers the same place day in and day out. Instead of like with a general assignment reporter, you go to work and you don't know what story you're going to be assigned. It's whatever is coming over the desk or telephone. But with a beat, you go, if you're a City Hall reporter, you're at City Hall every day. You have a desk.
Yeah.
And what happens is that the press secretary feeds you stories.
Yeah.
In many instances. And therefore you have to treat the press secretary with some respect, because they can give the story to one journalist or another, and you could end up being scooped on something.
Well,
you do this. And you're dependent as a City Hall reporter on a beat in having a decent relationship with the mayor's office. And the mayor, on the other hand, can treat you like shit because they know that your job is to get information out of City Hall. And so the mayor plays the refs. That's what happens.
All right, so let me throw back at you on this one. Because what you're describing is the way it goes. So here's my suggestion, which I've made before, and I will make it again. And I hope all the deans of all the major journalism schools are listening. It's time to end this notion that a hand-fed story is a scoop. Okay, so for instance, Block Club did an outstanding story the other day in analyzing police stops, and it's a well worth reading story. It's a piece of independent investigation. That is, in my opinion, a legitimate scoop. But when you get hand-fed a story,
right?
It's just like, I don't know, like you get hand-fed any story about the city's new attitude toward TIF financing, which one day I'll get into and explain to people. That's a hand-fed story. That's not a scoop. That's a hand-fed story. Okay?
Spoon-fed. Well, if you were the recipient of that hand-fed story,
Yeah.
That is your scoop. That's how it's a competitive business. And so it's
mindless
like,
competition.
And as a press secretary, a good press secretary,
yeah,
he or she will hand feed a given reporter a story as a reward, just like with your dog. You give him some treats because he did a good trick. It's a good boy. That's what a good press secretary does.
It's true.
Right. And you punish those who can't wait to be taken on a walk and so soils your rug. So what you do with them is say, naughty, naughty, you don't get a treat today.
It's so true. You know, it's so true. So cynical and jaded, but it's so true. I remember when Monroe was the guy, but you were up against Burke. See, Burke would go, this is funny, in the article that I just alluded to, they're talking about how other mayors have dealt with the press. In contrast to how Brandon Johnson deals with the press. And it says, former Mayor Harold Washington was charming and self-deprecating, using his sense of humor and vast vocabulary to disarm hostile questioners. Well, there's some truth to that. He did use his sense of humor, and he did have a vast vocabulary. But I interviewed Harold Washington many times in the 80s where he was really irritated, to put it mildly, at the press corps. Because he sensed a bias in the press corps against him, not just him as a black man, Monroe, but a black man that was looking out for black people in poor neighborhoods. If you're right. A black man and you're just doing the bidding of the downtown corporate community, I guess they could put up with you. But if you're a black man who's saying, no, it's time we have equality in this city and the time we spread things around, it's our turn type of black man, as Harold was, then that's going to be problems. So Ed Burke would go down to the city call press corps, ladies and gentlemen. This is the legacy. And it would be like, just like Monroe said, I'll use another metaphor, feeding time. Open up now. Okay, here you go. Here's your biscuit. Here's your biscuit. And they put out whatever Ed Burke said, basically. That, to me, is my memory of council wars. So Harold was mad a lot, right? Am I right or am I wrong? You knew the man.
But, the thing is, Harold once was told that he didn't look like a mayor. To which he responded, I am the mayor, and therefore this is how a mayor looks.
Do you remember who told him that?
No. I don't. Because he told me about it.
Yeah.
It wasn't during a feeding session.
Yeah. No, he was saying.
I was covering City Hall at the time.
Yeah. Now I'm gonna listen, I'm gonna repeat what I said. That was a bad strategy, Ronnie Reese. You know, I always love you for helping us get Brandon Johnson at the promontory, but that was a bad strategy, in my humble opinion, and Monroe agrees. And if you want good advice, call Monroe, call Delmarie Cobb. There are people who've been around the town, know how the game is played.
And would be happy to help him.
Yeah. It's not like degradating to ask older people who've been around and have experience for a little advice. Even Fonnie Willis went to her father down in, we'll get to Fonnie Willis in a little bit. I'm obsessed with that story coming out of Georgia. Even Fonnie Willis went to her dad for advice. Okay. So you're not above getting advice from older people.
Yeah. But it's partially the mayor's problem. The problem is Lonnie needs a little more experience under his belt.
Ronnie.
So does the mayor. Cause yeah. That whole thing with, building the tent grounds for the immigrants without first knowing that if the land is good or not.
Oh my God.
You gotta do your homework. That's part of it. You gotta do your homework.
No.
And if you don't, you will be embarrassed and they will beat you to death with it. The media.
Yeah, no. Yeah, until you feed them another story, and then they're yours. Okay, so I mean, it's a short memory. It's not like, you know, feed, take care of them, and then they'll take care of you. I mean, I watched the mastery of with the White Sox, Monroe. I mean, that was brilliant. And so, you know, here's in the developer here one more time, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to teach you how, explain to you how you were bamboozled, Chicago. So there's a huge chunk of land in the South Loop and the developer can't figure out how to develop. I know what I'll do. I'll bring the White Sox in and say, even though nobody has talked about a new stadium, and go, oh my God, the White Sox are going to unveil an absolutely gorgeous stadium that will create thousands and thousands of jobs on the state.
Let me get in on this. The problem the White Sox have is they're watching the Cubs and the whole development of Wrigleyville.
Yeah.
I mean, they own, the Cubs own that part of town.
They do. And, they own it.
Right, and where the White Sox stadium is pinned in with a railroad and the expressway and et cetera. So it has no bars for the most part or anything around it. So they need, the White Sox need a location where they too can be like the Cubs.
Well,
Bears want to be, because Bears have the same problem, is that now the really cool stadiums are like Disney World. Not only can you go there and watch them play, but you can go hang out there and get drunk with your friends, have a hot dog or two, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, okay.
Buy some souvenirs.
Let me push back. The White Sox don't need that. They want that. Okay? You know what I'm saying? When I had my affliction last week, another flare up of gout, I needed pain pills. Okay, that's different than White Sox are doing fine where they are.
And no, they are. There's billions more to be made.
If
they have all that stuff, and the thing is, they're not happy with. Again, they're looking at the Cubs and the Richters. Is that the name of the owner?
The White Sox completely subsidized, or not completely, are to a great degree subsidized by the taxpayers already.
Right.
The way the Rickets aren't. So they want to create. But to me, what drove that deal is that developer needed to fill up his undeveloped land. And so he brought in the White Sox to sweeten the pot. And then they called a reporter. This is the point I was going to make. And they fed him the story that this glorious stadium was coming here. And the next thing you know, it's getting free press. Hey, Brandon Johnson, this is how the game is played.
Right. Exactly.
Free press. They're like, oh, my God.
Donald Trump is president, ex-president.
Yeah.
Because in 2016, while the others were carefully planning what they were doing, Trump was getting free press all over the place. Anybody that would answer his call, he'd go talk to and lie to. And so he got so much exposure that people got used to him. And he got elected. Again, partially because Hillary didn't go to Detroit and Milwaukee. She made those two trips and talked to the media there. We wouldn't be in this big mess we're in today.
All right, so Monroe, let me just say this about your Trump analogy. It's an excellent one. Donald Trump's manipulation of the media in 2016 was brilliant. It was disgusting, but it was brilliant. It was effective. Donald Trump, again, as I was saying, was a celebrity, a personality, and that just drew the media in because that's like easier to cover than politics. So Donald Trump would like fly to a city in his airplane, and the media would be waiting for him.
Right.
All right. That was the advantage that Hillary Clinton didn't have. She was following more or less, like the Brandon Johnson way of dealing with the media. Where you're of the media and you're kind of hostile to the media and you're indifferent to the media. That's the game she was playing. And Donald Trump was well beyond her. He was even more hostile to the media, but he knew that that he was a draw for them. And so he played them. And you're right. Absolutely. Free press. It's a different, completely different thing than Brandon Johnson's gone for. But to me, Monroe, what Brandon Johnson is up against when he deals with the mainstream media in the city of Chicago is that there's a bias against the movement that elected him. And it's clear and obvious bias. If his movement was all about dealing with inequity and helping poor people. Now, whether they play true to that movement or not, is we will see. But that was what the movement was about. And there is hostility. There is a hostility in this town by the powers that be in corporate Chicago to redistribution, to progressive policies. We've seen it across the board. We saw it when the fair tax thing went down. We're watching it with the blowback, Bring Chicago Home, Monroe. You know this as well as I do.
Yeah, okay. So this is what they should be doing instead of what they're doing. Is that should be their narrative. And so every time they come up with something like that, they should go again say, this is what our administration is about. We're for the people. This is how this is going to impact the Chicagoans who need it. As a result of doing this way, it will make the city better for everybody else, because If you have things for poor Black and brown children to do after school, then there's a much better chance that they won't be shooting each other, because one, they were both on social media and one insulted the other. And so they have a shooting war over it. But you have to put it in context. You have to have a narrative that the media has to follow, or they will go against it because they don't like it. But if you stick with it, at some point, they'll come along, because Mayor Johnson is good at heart. He's trying to do the right thing. But because he fumbles and bumbles and everything, he gives them all sorts of excuses to jack him up every chance they get.
Yeah. Well, let's get into the issue of directly answering a question, because I think that's what you were alluding to when you said he fumbles and mumbles. Last week, Mayor Johnson had a press conference. We didn't talk about this, Monroe. Of course, you had a lot going on in your mind, absolutely, last week. We talked this week, Monroe's wife, Joyce Owens, passed. We're going to talk about that at the end. Last week, Mayor Johnson had a press conference about Spot Shooter, which is a device that alerts police to gunshots being fired. I suppose that's how it's supposed to work, and then the police can immediately respond. Very controversial program. The mayor was all over the map about whether he was getting rid of it. Clearly, his quote-unquote base, we'll get into the base, the movement that helped elect him was against it and wanted him to get rid of it. But on the other hand, it's also pretty obvious that the downtown business community wanted it in place, and the Democratic Party wanted it in place, because with the National Dems coming to Chicago in August, they're dealing with that threat of crime. And even if this program doesn't work, they want to be able to say it's there. Like, we're on top of things. You know, it's like, classic Chicago, classic anything. We don't know if it works or not, but people...
It doesn't work. The lead, which got buried last week, was that it's only worked one time. They only got one person with spots fire. One time.
Fair enough. But as long as the Joe Biden Democrats think it works, they want it in place in August, whether it works or not. So he was tugged in two directions, Monroe.
Yeah.
So he came before the press.
Well, they weren't going to cancel the convention.
No, but
No,
the point is he was being tugged in two directions on the issue of a Spot Shooter. So when he came before the press saw that and was hammering at him. Like, are you going to keep it? Are you going to get rid of it? And his response was like to talk in circles.
Right,
so.
Exactly. Now, I saw the circles. I heard
you saw the circles.
Yeah, right. What I'm saying is that since it doesn't work, and whatever amount of money it cost would was being wasted, he could have just as easily from his whole mission and what he talks about. He could have said, we're going to take whatever, but let's say it costs $2 million. I don't know what it costs, but let's say it costs $2 million. he could have said, we're going to take that money and get the those groups that are out there trying to chill the kids out from shooting each other. We're going to give it to them specifically during that time. We're going to come up with some programs that will be going on at the same time the convention is. So they will be too busy doing these great programs, the basketball tournament or whatever. They'll be too busy doing that instead of shooting at each other. And so everybody can have a grand old time.
Well, that would be one direct response. Now, what about this one?
Okay.
I'm going to give you, this is something I've never heard. This is popping into my head right now. Very dangerous.
Okay. Okay.
This is a potential response.
Yeah.
That Brandon Johnson, like if he were honest, like it was Liar Liar, the Jim Carrey movie where he was fed a serum and had to tell the truth.
Yeah.
Which is a great movie, by the way. All right. So what if he goes before the press corps, he says, ladies and gentlemen, we all know, you know, I know this thing is pretty much worthless. It's not going to help anyone in the fight against crime. On the other hand, all the major editorial papers seem to love it. There's a strong faction of hardcore aldermen in the city council who love it. There's all a MAGA in the city of Chicago that just ran against me with Paul Ballas that apparently loves it. The downtown business community apparently loves it, even though it doesn't work.
But right.
Even though it's illogical for them to love a program that doesn't work, they still love it for reasons. Who knows? I can't deal with the insanity and the illogic of people who believe in something that doesn't work. I just have to deal with it as a reality. That if I cancel this program, the Chicago Tribune editorial board is going to rake me over the coals. And plus, I got Joe Biden and the Democrats going to be grief. So here's what I'm going to do, press corps. I'm going to play it two ways. I'm going to tell my supporters that I'm getting rid of it. And I'm going to assure the Tribune and Ballas and the Fraternal Order Police that I'm going to keep it until September. So I'm going to have two things at once. That's what I'm doing, ladies and gentlemen. I'm juggling because you guys are so illogical and weird and twisted. What if he were honest and said that? What do you think the response would be? What do you think if the mayor was actually honest and talked to us?
That adults? Would have been much better than what he did. Yeah, vastly better than what he did.
Oh, jeez.
Because, I mean, the obvious response to what he did was, well, if it's good enough to keep it for the Democrat when the visitors come to town, then why isn't it good enough for the citizens to have it?
You know what? It's you know, here's the thing. They always underestimate the media. I know you guys think the media is really dumb, you know, but they're smart enough to ask that question that Monroe
right.
just
right.
Even I can figure that one out.
Right. And plus, now you get on there, the spot shooter people go, wait a minute. We like that money you give it us. So why should we just go for 6 more months or whatever it is doing this and then say goodbye to us? If you don't want us, then you don't want us. We're going to go find another meat city to BS on this and make the money.
Oh, Lord. Yeah.
There's equipment involved in this.
Yeah. And by the way, God forbid in the city of Chicago to have an investigation of, like, first of all, who sold us on this program? it's like the parking meters. It's like when they sold the parking meters. There was never
right.
any accounting. Like, who came to the Chicago with this cockamamie idea? Like,
right.
who brought this to the table? You know what I'm saying?
And that, you know, that's another mistake that the Johnson administration is making. What's is that? Had Johnson been Mayor Daley, he'd have been blaming any problem we have on Mayor Lightfoot.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. It's like, I don't know. What am I going to do? He set this thing up, and we're trying to get rid of it, you know, but it was such a dumb idea.
No, the funniest one in that regard was Mayor Rahm. Mayor Rahm spent his entire political career kissing up to Mayor Daley.
Right.
Sucking up to Mayor Daley. He's the toughest guy in the world, Mayor Rahm. Not to Mayor Daley, he's not. He'd be like, oh, Mayor Daley, you're so smart. You're so great. Then he gets elected mayor, and he inherits all the problems that Daley left him. Okay,
right.
But he it's like he couldn't chastise Daly by name, because then the obvious question, even the media could figure it out, is, well, why were you praising him all that time if he was doing such a horrible job? Plus, I think he was afraid of the Dalys, you know, politically afraid of them and the power they had. So he would never mention, he would criticize the programs that he had inherited without mentioning the man that he inherited them from, if you get what I'm just saying.
Yeah, right, of course.
The mayor who cannot be named. So, yeah, there's so many games that get played on in Chicago. And,
well, I mean, that's politics. Okay, the games get played because, as Mayor Washington used to say, politics ain't beanball. So you have hard decisions to make, or you got to finesse something. Sometimes you got to be duplicitous. And there are things you have to do to get through politics because there are no easy answers or solutions to a lot of things. So what you want to do is impose your will on the politicians, the city council, and the media.
Yeah. Yeah. Impose your will. Wow. Well, I would say that, man, that is, ladies and gentlemen, a cynical lesson of a life in politics from Monroe Anderson. How many years has it been? 40 years or so of cover? No, 50. Oh, my God. Of watching this game. But yes, you have to impose your will to a certain degree. And I don't think you're imposing your will when you go before an editorial board and say, let's have an off the record conversation.
Right, exactly.
What the hell?
Yeah, right. Now, thank you for inviting me, but you can't use anything I tell you and attach my name to it.
What? Say what? What am I going to do with this then? First of all, we want to make ourselves look really good by saying we got you. Okay.
Right. I mean,
it's like me bragging endlessly that you came to the promontory. Right. You know, we want to be able to say, hey, I matter. I'm significant. All right. you know, that was, I will say this, Monroe.
Yes.
There have been moments. I first met you at such a moment where there's such an off the record thing. Way back when I used to work for the Reporter newspaper, and our publisher, editor John McDermott, may he rest in peace, one of the great men in Chicago history, in my opinion, would invite guests to join us for lunch. Once a month on Friday, and you came. Remember, you came. I've talked about this so many times in this show, and reminded you that you got paid.
Yeah, I came. I don't remember what I said.
Oh my God!
Because I did hundreds of those things.
Dude, you were on fire. I remember it, and I don't remember the specifics.
Yeah,
but you came. I want to say it would have been right around the time Harold Washington first got elected, and you came in, and but the point was, John would sit people down. We would have lunch. Helena Appleton, shout out to you, my dear friend Helena Appleton. She died. Would have made the lunch, and it was absolutely delicious. And we would have the lunch, and then John would say, "This is off the record," so that the guests would feel comfortable in talking, and it would be sort of like an educational thing. You follow what I'm saying, Monroe? And so then you, oh my God, you talked about being a young black man working at the Tribune. And I was like taking notes, man. I was, you know, I was like, whoa, you're not going to last long with that attitude.
Right. Exactly. And Jim Squires, the editor of the Tribune, referred to me as one of his troublesome black reporters.
I don't mean to laugh, but God damn, you know what I'm saying?
He was at some editor's convention.
Yeah.
And he ran into another editor that was black. Somebody who was black and an editor. But anyway, he was crying the blues to him and told him he had these two troublesome, these two problem.
Who was the other one?
Black journalist.
Who was the other one? The other troublesome black journalist.
John White. And John White was just my friend. We were at John said, I was getting him in trouble, and he wasn't even doing any, which was pretty much true.
John invited you. I told you this. Leonina McLean, may she rest in peace, one of the great writers in Chicago, and Clarence Page. He came individually. Right. And three different perspectives, what it's like to be a Black journalist at the Tribune. But there was a lot of, a lot of points of agreement, particularly from you and Leonina McLean. And it kind of reinforced everything I thought about the Tribune, which was, in my humble opinion, and don't get mad at me, Monroe, an absolutely despicable newspaper for years and the role they played in the city of Chicago. All right, let's leave advice to Mayor Johnson for the moment. I'm sure he's not going to listen to it anyway. And move on to something that I'm utterly obsessed with. I talked about it at great length yesterday with State's Attorney Kim Fox. I urge everybody to check it out. And that is the MAGA counter-assault against Fonnie Willis, the chief prosecutor in Fulton County, Georgia, who is roughly the equivalent of Kimberly Fox for Atlanta. Atlanta is part of a larger county, as is Chicago, and the state's attorney serves the full county. And she is leading the charge against Donald Trump. This is me speaking, not Monroe. I believe she's a very courageous public official. I believe she's doing a great turn for the country. Donald Trump, as I said yesterday with Kim Fox, it's public. We saw it. Do you know what, Monroe? After my conversation with Kim Fox, I was taking a walk and it hit me. What Donald Trump did with the election and his attempt to overturn the election and take a victory that Joe Biden won and turn it into a victory for Donald Trump, an attempted coup, was like Columbo. Follow me on this. In Columbo, one of my favorite shows from the 70s, we saw the crime. We would see the crime in the opening scenes. And then the whole story was, would Columbo, the great detective, figure out who the criminal was and force that criminal to face justice? So what we were watching in Atlanta, we saw the crime. Donnie Trump went on. He had the phone conversation where he said, get rid of the votes. Right. We saw the crime. Okay.
Right.
So now finally,
and she didn't have to figure out anything except how to convince us that what we saw, who were we going to believe? Trump or lying eyes.
Yes. I always think it's Richard Pryor who said that. And then I was like, no, Ben, it's not right. And so she's assembled the case. I give her credit for that. So MAGA, realizing that they're going to get clobbered and that Donald Trump cannot pardon himself because it's a state case, and Monroe's been predicting this for a while, will probably end up in prison for attempting to steal an election.
I'm going to back off of prison. He's going to be under house arrest.
Okay, house arrest.
Mar-a-Lago, yeah.
Okay, unless
he just, we'll see, but that's probably what's going to happen.
So what they do is, thanks to divorce proceedings between Nathan Wade, who's Fonnie Willis' appointed prosecutor in this case, and his wife, try to cook up a case that there's some kind of conflict of interest because Fonnie Willis was having an affair with Nathan Wade. It's absolutely preposterous. There's no conflict of interest. It's an office romance. There are thousands of them going on all the time.
Right.
To get America to think that there's something wrong there requires 45% of the population to be robots to MAGA. Check that off. And then the rest of the public has to just got to convince a few of what Rahm Emanuel and David Axelrod swing voters in suburban Milwaukee, and you're in, baby. And that's what I'm watching this manipulation, Monroe. It's just like blowing my mind. Are they going to get away with this? Like, you talk about Mayor Daley controlling the Chicago press corps. This is beyond that, man. This is like brainwashing on a massive scale. And Kimberly
it's titillating. It's titillating. What we are now in a culture where soap operas and sex scenes and the stuff that goes to our basis nature is in vogue, and so when Michelle Obama talked about we go high when they go low, well, maybe she and Barack go high, but everybody else is digging in the ditches, wallowing in the dirt. So Trump, I mean, he's good at going to the lowest common denominator he can to make his point. And so, unfortunately, Fani let the nature get to her. And she had campaigned. The thing is, the other problem she has, she campaigned. She literally said she wouldn't have an affair with somebody when she was in the office, because the person who she beat in the election had been involved in some scandalous sex affair. And so she said, I won't be doing that. And then lo and behold, she was.
So do you subscribe?
Or as my mother used to say, what happens in the dark must come to the light.
wise advice. I did not know. I somehow or other missed that promise. That was probably something on MSNBC. And as everybody knows, Monroe watches it, so I don't have to. So I was unaware of that campaign pledge, which is quite an unusual campaign pledge. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm absorbing that. Like, why is that of interest to anybody? I don't know why any politicians would make that pledge.
Right.
What difference is it to you what I do in the dark? You know, it's like what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Like what?
Right.
It's not true. You can't commit a murder in Vegas, and they're not going to investigate it. Actually, I stole that joke from Norm Macdonald. I believe you're right. The titillating nature of it all it draws people in far more than like the details of how Donald Trump was trying to coerce Georgia election officials into giving him the election.
Because we know he was doing that. I mean, because it was there.
Yeah, we saw it.
And played or whatever. We knew. So, okay, boring. What else? They were knocking boots. Going on vacation.
That's
interesting.
Are you interested by it? Let me ask you this. Just be honest. You're not? Yeah.
No.
Are you interested by the Tim Landy?
I mean, if I knew her personally,
mm-hmm.
and I knew him personally, then of course I'd be interested. Whoa, I didn't know that. And you know, I always thought she was above the frail, or whatever, you know. But since I only know that she has a very important job to do, that's what I'm interested in.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. I mean, if we knew him, you'd call me up and go, Ben, you won't believe this.
Right, exactly. Right. Guess who's doing who? Because that's human nature, of course.
Yes.
And as journalists, and the fact is that we barter in gossip. I mean, that's part of the profession. It's like, whoa.
That is true. That's it. And people gobbled it up. So yeah, I understand. I'm not above you, America. Okay. I am not above you. That said, I'm not going to have her bounce from the case because she was having an affair. All right. So stop it, MAGA. And I hope that judge in Georgia doesn't fall for this because that would be preposterous that Donald Trump.
Yeah, he's not because who knows? He may have a chick on the side or a cell phone, we know, you know.
Oh, my thing. God. Remember that, Monroe? Remember when Clinton? Oh, my God.
Right.
Clinton, when the Republicans were coming after Clinton for his affair with Monica Lewinsky. And then it started off, I think Gingrich had to step down because he had an affair.
Right.
And then, let's see if I could do that. Livingston was brought in. God, I can't believe I remember this. To replace Gingrich, this congressman from New Orleans or Louisiana, he had a step down. And then they brought in old boy Hastert. And then Johnny Hastert.
Who had a dude on the side.
Yeah. I'm like, God damn. Republicans are so shameless.
Right, exactly. No, so that's why Kennedy – because he having all these affairs, And it didn't even get reported back then because
world,
everybody had a gentleman's agreement. And it was mostly men in the media back then. And so it's like, okay, you know, who's not doing that? Or if you're not doing it, you love to do it.
You're absolutely right. And oh my God, I go on and on. When Clarence Thomas had his hearing in 1991, and it turned out there's accusations that that he really enjoyed pornography.
Right.
Remember the the Republicans were aghast. How dare you say this? You know about this. I'm like, did you realize?
And he was also corny and square. You know, is that pubic hair on my Coke can?
You have to go back and give the details. All right, so I got to ask you about this one piece of advice. I talked about this yesterday with Kim Fox and your thoughts on this. Again, you know, for me, all my ranting and railing about this, I was obsessed with it. I followed very closely the testimony, and I particularly appreciated the testimony of Fannie Willis's father, who himself is a lawyer and was a former Black Panther. Interesting guy in his own right. Love to have him come on the show. Hey, if you're listening, please, I'll reach out to you. But they were talking about the fact that Fannie Willis paid for many of the fancy meals, et cetera, and so forth with cash. And she said, this is a lesson I learned from my father. My father always told me to have cash on hand because you never know when you're going to need cash. So I always have some cash on hand. That's why there's no receipts from a credit card company. And then the father came on and testified that, yes, that's a daughter. That's advice he gave his daughter. And he goes, it's a Black thing. So Monroe, is this advice you've given to youngsters? Always have cash available. Is this advice that someone ever gave you? Always have cash available.
No, but I know people who believed in that. In testimony, the father said that he had advised her to always have 6 months worth, which seemed like a lot to me. But my approach, because I'm a different generation than he was, slightly different. I mean, and I'm not from the South. But as a journalist, my approach was to always have 6 months worth of money somewhere in the bank or somewhere, in case I got fired, so that I'd be fine for at least that amount of time. So I had my own money measurement and approach to it. But you always have to be prepared for the worst to happen, and that's what I have taught my son, is to make sure you save enough money to where if you need to go without a job, you can at least last 6 months.
Yeah, I
don't believe in under the mattress. I believe in letting your money make money for you.
That advice is classic father to child advice. And I don't even think it's limited to race by any means. It's not a Black thing. It's not a white thing. That is classic father. Father looking out for son or father looking out for daughter advice. Like, look, you can't trust these people. They can fire you tomorrow.
Right.
And particularly if you're in trouble at all, that's a miracle in so many ways, but that, whatever, I guess they just decided to ignore you. But no, that's great. I mean, I've been fired. You know it. You know what I'm saying, Monroe? You get fired. Yeah. You better have some money, you know? Yeah. So the thing about the cash, I know guys, I don't know if you knew guys like this, Monroe, like we're very proud of the fact they had a lot of cash. Did you know guys like that? Like they would never pay for anything with a credit card. They would pull out, like they would have a wad. A lot of times.
A money clip. Yeah, they'd have a money clip. Yeah. You know, that was partially, I mean, that was part of that philosophy with that, but also the way to flash how successful you were, that you had all this money that you could carry walking around. Of course, there was also the Hollywood Row. You're familiar with that, right?
What's that?
You had a Hollywood Row where it was a $50 bill or something on the outside and a bunch of singles on the inside. So people would just automatically assume that you had all this money that made you look a lot richer than you actually are. Trump has a property approach to that sometimes.
What do you mean?
making his properties a lot more valuable.
Oh my God.
Faking people out. You know, yeah. Like he had a 3,000 feet to his apartment.
Wow.
No, yeah. 30,000. Sorry, three times the size. That's what it was. 30,000. And the price, I mean, he was pricing his properties like four or five times more than the most expensive property in the country was selling for. And he was saying, oh, this is worth this or that. Except when it got to be tax time, they were, oh my Lord, this little piece of property.
So we will close with this. I see we're running out of time. We don't have time to take the deep dive on Tucker going to Putin in Russia. We'll do that next week. That's not going over, ladies and gentlemen. That is that display. But
yeah, no, he's going to be Putin's bitch next week too.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere. Right. He's going on to the Putin team, and that's where they're going. Very, very bizarre development with MAGA, where MAGA's going. But I just gotta get your thoughts about this, Monroe. I saw this in the paper today, and shout out the listener Frank texted me last night about it. So there is a contested Republican primary for Congress here in Illinois between an incumbent Mike Boss and Darren Bailey. And Darren Bailey, of course, was the Republican nominee who ran against Pritzker in, good God, it was 2022. I can't believe 2 years have gone by since that election. And Pritzker mopped the floor with him. Far right wing MAGA lover, Darren Bailey, was too right for Illinois, although he got, when I think about him, Monroe, he still got like 46% of the vote or something like that, which just goes to show you how insane the times are. Anyway, so Bailey had been a state senator. Now he's running against Bost, B-O-S-T, in the Congress as right of Bost. So Bost is a MAGA man to the core, but Bailey is to the right of Bost. And as such, Trump's endorsement is absolutely essential. If you're going to bring over the cultists, you have to have the cult leader telling you to vote for him. Well, Trump went with Bost. What a cynical move by Trump. Darren Bailey has been kissing Trump's butt for years. I mean,
it's not a cynical move. It's man. A Trump move. You know, he has no friends. He just has enemies or people who he can use. he's The head of the RNC, he's thrown her under the bus.
Yeah, Ronna McDonald. Yes. You're absolutely correct. I guess it's not cynical. I guess it's just Trump.
It's Trump. Yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, it's a Trump move, period.
Trump's attitude is,
what have you done for me lately?
Yeah. Or that Boston will probably win, and I'll look weak if I endorse Bailey. And so the only chance Bailey has if Trump comes out strong for him, but since Bost is a puppet too, they're both puppets. Like it's one puppet or the other. But here's the statement. So get your thoughts. So this is, so Darren Bailey had to issue a statement in response. Here's his statement. This is a statement in response to the fact that Donald Trump, a man whose butt, Darren Bailey has been kissing for the last, I don't know what, 9 years or whatever, has endorsed Mike Bost. Here we go. Darren Bailey proudly stands with President Trump despite disagreeing with him on this endorsement. We look forward to working with President Trump to champion working families, secure our borders, defend our freedoms, and put America first. No compromises, no apologies. Man, he's still kissing the man's booty. Okay.
Right. It's absolutely amazing. It's absolutely, but it's the reality is what we have developing here, and I can say this as the self-declared national expert on white people, is a white nationalist, a white Christian movement going on. where they are trying to, as a religion, and a very distorted religion. It's not Christian as Christian as a lot of people who read the Bible believe it was. But they have this white Christian movement going on where they want everybody to have their beliefs. They want they're declaring American as a Christian nation. Although Thomas Jefferson owned the Quran and read it, but anyway, they're trying to go back to America as they imagined it in the 1950s, where you had to say your prayer and the national anthem at the beginning of class, and you had to, and if you didn't go to church or Sunday school, and something was wrong with you. That's where they're going with this. And all this gay stuff. They want to take abortion away. They're figuring out all kind of ways to take abortion away because they want women to be on their best behavior. And as we know, women at least had to sneak and have sex until the pill became available in the mid-60s. And then women could do as they please because they didn't have to worry about getting pregnant.
Yeah, and it's all lip service, ladies and gentlemen, because the leader of this movement, Donald Trump, did not abide by any of these prescriptions.
Right, right.
You know, he was a libertine to the core. I just believe that he forced some of his lovers to have abortions, Monroe, back in the day. I mean,
paid them to have abortions. You know, this thing's going to cost you $1,000, and why don't I add an extra $130,000 to it?
Well, you know, he paid off. Now that's the next case in New York. Darren Bailey and Mike Boss are going to have to look the other way at. You know, he paid off Stormy Daniels to be quiet about their little tryst, their little 5-minute affair in a hotel room somewhere.
I forget right. Which also makes this whole affair just ridiculous. You know, is she was having a thing with her guy, and Trump, in the meantime, was having a thing at one point with a porn star and a Playboy centerfold. And they're able to overlook that, or his bragging about grabbing women by the loins.
Yeah,
all that stuff is like, well, you know, it's not true. Or where's the sin in it, or something? But then she does this, and they try and make it a criminal case.
Yes, they do. Try to make it a criminal case, and I have to. I'm just gonna have faith in the judge down in Georgia. He's not gonna fall for it because, as Kim Fox pointed out yesterday, if he does kick Fani Willis off, that would really damage the right.
Yeah, he's not gonna fall for it. That's pretty obvious. But she's also up for re-election, and Kim Fox personally knows how that could go.
Yeah. Well, I think the voters would be with her in Fulton County. That's my sense of it. All right, let's close with some news having to do with the great Joyce Owens. That's Monroe's wife. We talked about this last week. She died about a week ago, and a great artist, brilliant artist, I would say. And Monroe, you just told me this before we went on the air, so why don't you talk a little bit about it? Chicago State is going to honor Joyce. Go ahead. Why don't you
get Yeah, Joyce taught at Chicago State for more than 20 years. She was commissioned to do a portrait of Gwendolyn Brooks when the library there was named the Gwendolyn Brooks Library. And anyway, this late this year, November or December, there's going to be an exhibit there with Joyce and Richard Hunt, who's the incredibly talented and prolific artist. He has more public art sculptures throughout the country than any other artist. He has, I think, maybe a dozen in Chicago alone. Mm-hmm. There's one near the Cultural Center, for example, next to it on Washington or, it's right next to it, or Randolph. It may be Randolph. Anyway, the two of them are going to be, Richard passed a couple of months ago or something. So the two of them are going to be recognized in an art show there.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. Richard Hunt, when Richard Hunt died, that was chronicled throughout the country, New York Times, Washington Post, et cetera, and so forth. Great sculptor.
Right.
The studio was in Lincoln Park, as I recall, Monroe.
Yeah.
We had dinner this weekend, just down the corner from where we had dinner.
Right. Across. Yeah, right. And yeah, that used to be a CTA bus barn or something. The building was where they did work on buses.
Yeah.
So it has a big crane in it. That's how he could do his sculptures there.
But see, that's the thing about Joyce, all these years I knew her, she's very modest in many ways. So like I didn't like know she was friends and peers with Richard Hunt and people like that, but she was.
She just
made a big deal about it.
Yeah. In fact, Richard told her that she could do sculpture. Because she was just, at the time, she was just a, well, not just, but she was a painter. She did canvases and what have you. And she told Richard how envious she was of him, that he was doing sculpture. And he said, well, why don't you do sculpture? She said, just do it. And so she started doing these three-dimensional sculptures out of wood where the design is incredible, and then she would paint them. So she combined her painting with her eye for form, and she had this Eddie Glaud of Princeton fame and an MSNBC regular has one of her sculptures, her mask that she does. He bought it. He just saw it and wanted it.
So that'd be awesome. We'll give you more details about that as Monroe finds out about him. But that's something else. Joyce Owens and Richard Hunt, two of the greats of the Chicago Art World. All right, Monroe, we run out of time. So I'll let you get back to your day. Thank you very much. And I'll talk to you next Wednesday.
All right.
And Mayor Johnson, if you need Monroe's number, just give me a call. I'll pass it on. And Delmarie Cobb as well. All right. Also want to thank producer Chris. He does a great job. Give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Peace and love, everybody.
And remember, you can stay in the know on all things Chicago and all things Ben Jarofsky at ChicagoReader.com. If you want to follow Ben on Instagram, well, that's easy. It's at Benny J Show. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow The Ben Jarofsky Show on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.